Okay, we are continuing this morning our study and look at some Bible background information, just going back and trying to understand some of the details about some of the events and the things of Bible times, so that hopefully when we come to the Bible, we might have a little bit of a richer understanding of some of the things that we read, knowing that, you know, that the thing with the Bible is you will never find in your study of the Bible, you'll never find the bottom. You'll never reach the bottom of your study where you say, well, I've gone as deep as anybody can go. Because the more that you learn, the more that you study, the deeper you are able to go into the Word. And isn't that what God talked about? God talked about, He used two different words. Both of them start with the word M, with a letter M. He used two different words to talk about the Word and the depth that you could go with it. You know what those two words are? Not talking about mud. That's not one of the M words. And it's not talking about digging down into the, give me another M word for some kind of layer in the earth. He talked about the milk and he talked about the meat. Now, some people can't deal with the meat yet and they're still working on the milk. And that's okay. But when you come to the study of the Word of God, it will enrich you every time that you get into it. And so we've talked about various things in geography and tried to look last week at some of the money aspects in the Bible to say, here's how an understanding of the value of certain coins would help us to have a better appreciation of things. But what about clothing in the Bible? Where's the first time we read about clothing in our Bibles? Genesis, in the Garden of Eden. Who were the first people to wear clothes? Adam and Eve. They made their own clothes, and this is a nice modest appearance of what they made. What? When they sinned, when Adam and Eve sinned, what did they come to a realization of? They were naked. Due to their shame, they came to that realization, and so they tried to They made an attempt to cover up their nakedness by doing what? Sewing fig leaves together. I guess if that's what you got, that's what you got. They sewed the fig leaves together and made what the Bible would call some kind of aprons. But that was not necessarily what God considered to be modest apparel. So before God drove them out of the Garden of Eden, what did God do? God made them some new clothes. What did he make them out of? Fig leaves? He made them out of animal skins. And so the word that's used there for those animal skins indicates something that came down at least to the knee level, if not something that even came down to the ankle level. Was God concerned about their modesty? Was there a difference? What, was he just wanting them to be warm? Was that the thing? So he gave them a coat of skin. Here was something that was much more in tune with covering their bodies than simply these fig leaves would be. And so right here at the beginning of the Bible, we get an idea that clothes are going to play perhaps an important part in a study of the Word of God. And so I want to quickly look at just a couple notes, and then I want us to see how some of this comes into play in the Bible. Obviously, they wore clothes that were made out of animal hides. Is there anything wrong with wearing clothes that are made out of animal skins? You know, I realize there are those who are trying to protect animals today, but I dare say there's not much that you can wear today that's not made from some kind of animal. Did God give us the right to wear animal skins, clothing from animals? Well, the first clothes that he made were made out of animals. What else did God give us? Did God give us dominion over this earth and the animals of this earth? I find it increasingly frustrating that for some reason, We have flipped that coin over. Our society, when I say we, have flipped that coin over to where today animals seem to have dominion over us. And the rights of animals seem to have dominion over the rights of people. That's backwards, isn't it? It's not the way that God intended it. This last week we had a little baby coral snake that was out in front of the church building. Maybe I shouldn't tell you that, but I just did. We had a little baby coral snake that was out in front of the church building this week. And I got all sorts of flack for killing that thing. You killed an innocent little snake. Yes, I did. God gave me dominion over that snake. We figured out later that it was a coral snake, but to me, it was a snake. It was only about that long, it's only about that long. But to me, that doesn't matter. All right, that's off topic, but that was, anyway, they wore animal hides. They wore clothing that was made out of flax, which they grew a lot of in Egypt. Was the major place where they had those things, where they would grow that flax, where they would stretch it out, where they would sew it together, create clothing out of it. And so when you read about people wearing fine linen, like Joseph did, when you read about, Luke 16, where it talks about the rich man who was clothed in fine linen, this was made out of flax that they had grown. The interesting thing is that it's a part of the garments of the priests. They were made out of flax. We don't have time to look at it, but over in Ezekiel chapter 44, God said that one of the reasons he wanted them to wear the garments that he gave them was to reduce the amount of sweating that they would do. What would make the priests sweat in their job? The what? The sacrifices. Did they work around fire quite a bit? Yeah. So God designed or commanded them a clothing. Sometimes we don't always know why God commands the things that he commands. But you read about the clothing of the priest in the book of Exodus. But then you get over to Ezekiel, and Ezekiel says, one of the reasons was to control how much they were sweating. Here they were working around all of this fire. But they wore animal hides, they wore flax that they had grown. They wore, obviously, wool was a major part of what they wore, coming from the sheep and the goats. Look over in Deuteronomy 22. We're not going to point out everything that's on these slides. It's just up here for those who would rather read some things on the slides. But look in Deuteronomy 22. Why does God say in Deuteronomy 22 that they were not to wear, here's a command of God, they were not to wear any clothing that was mixed. You shall not wear, Deuteronomy 22, verse 11, you shall not wear a garment of different sorts, such as wool and linen mixed together. Why do you suppose God gave that command? What's wrong with wool and linen mixed together? We could sit here all day and try to surmise, is that like cotton and polyester? Are you supposed to have a 50-50 blend? What's the deal? Look in the verse that's before it in verse 10, Deuteronomy 22, verse 10. You shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Why did he give that command? They're not going to work so good together, are they? Now, in this context, where God is giving these laws, there are a variety of laws that have to do with the fact that there is to be, and while he's giving details for them to follow, the broader understanding for them was to be that they are to be set apart from all other peoples. Why not wear wool and linen mixed together? Some have surmised that the reason was as a visual reminder to them that we're not supposed to be mixed together with all of these other people. We're supposed to be separate. We're not supposed to be mingled together with the people of the world. We're supposed to keep ourselves separate. So we may not know every reason as to why God gives this, but some have said maybe it was just to remind them of who they were and how they were supposed to be set apart in their relationship with God. How about sackcloth? I couldn't find a real good image of sackcloth. I think this is pretty close to what we might imagine. Here's what we would think of as what? Some kind of a burlap. Anybody got burlap on today? Not on purpose, right? Now, not just did they wear burlap, not just did they wear sackcloth, but this is something that they wore against their skin. That's just wrong. To wear it against your skin? When I was a boy, I would not wear any shirts unless I had one of those white t-shirts underneath it. For some reason, my skin was so sensitive to itching on those shirts and those tags. Oh, I hated tags. In the back, don't you hate tags? Those things are from the devil. You know, and so they have all these tags in the back. I wouldn't wear a shirt unless I had one of those cotton t-shirts underneath it. The Jews would flip that around sometimes. And instead of wearing that which was nice and smooth to the skin on the inside, they'd put that sackcloth on the inside. Why would they do that? Usually, when you read about them wearing sackcloth, it was during a time of mourning or penitence. And so there are several examples. When Jacob believed that Joseph was dead, he went and put sackcloth on. When David was mourning for the death of Abner, he commanded everyone to put sackcloth on. When Ahab heard that Jezebel was going to be killed, some people might have thrown a party, but Ahab went and put sackcloth on. Look in the book of Jonah. Look in the little book of Jonah, the end of your Old Testament in the Minor Prophets. When Jonah came to preach to the city of Nineveh, first of all, did Jonah want to do that? When God told Jonah to do that in Jonah chapter 1, where'd Jonah go? He went the other way. God got his attention in Jonah chapter 2, and so Jonah started to and went to Nineveh in Jonah chapter 3. But look in Jonah chapter 3. He gets to these wicked, vile, pagan people. And in Jonah chapter 3 and verse 5, the people of Nineveh believed God. Jonah had told them in verse 4, yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Jonah 3 and verse 5, so the people of Nineveh believed God, proclaimed a fast, and put on sackcloth from the greatest of them to the least of them. Then word came to the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne, laid aside his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and he sat in ashes. And he proclaimed, and look in verse 7, where his proclamation went out and said, let neither man nor beast, herd or flock, taste anything, nor let them eat or drink water, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth. Why did they do this? Tell me why you go out. When you find out you have been sinning against God, why do you go out and put sackcloth on? Trina, what'd you say?
You said out of necessity.
Out of necessity? They were really sorry. Have you ever been really sorry and not put sackcloth on? Why'd they do that, Dirk? Self-abasement. Self-punishment. To be a reminder to them. Do you normally intentionally go and put on something that would be uncomfortable or irritating? No. But it was an immediate reminder to them of the seriousness of their actions. Were their actions a continual irritation to God? Yes. Were their actions continually frustrating to God? Yes. They went and put that on as a reminder to themselves, and not just a reminder to themselves, but as a sign to God to say, God, and they've a couple have said it, as a sign of our godly sorrow. God, we are so sorry. And if there's something we can do to show you how sorry we are, let us go and put on the sackcloth. Even some of the prophets, when they came and were preaching repentance unto the people, sometimes they put sackcloth on as a sign to the people to say, folks, we got to get things right. We're not doing things right. And so that was a common reaction, a common thing that they would go and that they would wear. What about you get to the New Testament, and this is Old Testament and New Testament, but I want to look at some New Testament passages. The Jewish men frequently wore what was called an undergarment, what we would call an undergarment, and then they wore an outer garment. You know, and in the illustration I gave a minute ago, it would be that undershirt, and then it would be the outer shirt. But they always wore an outer garment that would, or an undergarment, I mean, that was worn next to the skin. It would go down to the knees, or in most cases would go all the way down to the ankles. Now, this is just an undergarment. This is not the outer garment. And when they were only clad in their undergarment, they were considered to be naked. Look in John chapter 21. This is a passage that always intrigued me. And for the longest time, you know, confused me. In John chapter 21, Jesus had been raised from the dead in John chapter 20. But his disciples had gone back and were fishing. And in John chapter 21, he appears to them again. This time they were out on the sea fishing, and Jesus appeared to them on the shore. John chapter 21, verse 4, Jesus stood on the shore. Verse 5, he asked them if they had any food. Verse 6, he told them to cast the net on the right side of the boat and they would find some. And so they caught a multitude of fish. In fact, down in what verse tells us? 153. Verse 11 tells us that they caught 153 large fish. They were unable to draw it into the boats. But look at verse 7. Therefore, the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, John said to Peter, it is the Lord. Now, when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on, not off, he put on his outer garment, for he had removed it, and plunged into the sea to swim to Jesus. I've watched the Olympics, haven't you? Those guys walk out there, and they might have their sweatsuits on. They might have their their workout suits on. But when they get ready to swim, do they usually put on something else? I mean, do they usually put on another robe on top of that before they dive into the water? You ever seen anybody do that? No, they start taking stuff off. Peter, before he dove into the water to swim to Jesus, he put his outer garment on. And I always thought, that doesn't make sense. What? If you're going to swim, why do you want something else on? It was because when he was out in the boat, he had taken his robe, his outer cloak off and laid it down while they were fishing. But to the Jews, to be clad only in that undergarment was considered to be immodest and naked. Were they naked? No. Not. In our definition of being naked, no, they were not naked. In their definition, in their understanding, I don't have enough clothes on. And so before he was going to go and meet Jesus, he put something else on so that he would be considered decent, decently attired. I think it's interesting for us to think about this in relationship to what we saw about Adam and Eve. They made themselves garments of fig leaves, and God came along and said, you know what? Let's cover that up a little bit more. At least down that full shirt, as it was, that they were given, a full shirt of animal hide to wear. And then to look at the mentality of the Jews to say, even though I have this undergarment on and it may cover my whole body, it's not decent. It's not proper. I don't know that we have enough shamefacedness today in our society about what is modest apparel. And it's interesting and discouraging to have discussions in Bible classes with our teens and preteens and talk to them about modest apparel, because there's all sorts of different definitions as to what that means. But apparently there wasn't a whole lot of different definitions back in the Bible. They said, we're going to cover our bodies, and we're going to make sure that they're properly covered. We would do well today to think about that in relationship to passages like 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 12 that talks about being adorned in modest apparel, and 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 4, where we not only need to be concerned about being outwardly adorned and outwardly modest, but focus also on the inward person of the heart and make sure that while on the outside we might look modest to people, we got to make sure on the inside that we're looking right to God too. So they had that outer garment. They had that undergarment, and then they would have this outer garment, sometimes called a cloak, sometimes called a robe. Sometimes they would throw it over their shoulder, as is in this image. I'll have an image here in just a second that shows more of it like a robe, where, you know, sometimes it would be thrown over like some kind of a sash that would wrap around a shoulder, or they might put it on more like we would consider a robe. But there was this outer garment that was usually some kind of a square rectangular piece of cloth that was wrapped around them. Sometimes it may have, you know, what we would think of as sleeves, but a lot of times it didn't have those cut sleeves. It was just that large piece of cloth that was wrapped around them. Now, the Jews, look in Numbers chapter 15. Turn to Numbers chapter 15, and while you're at it, turn to Deuteronomy 22 as well. The Jews, on this outer garment, and sometimes in more recent years, and when I say more recent years, within the last few thousand years, they have added another piece that is more like a, how do you explain this, more like a scarf. Have you seen these Jewish scarfs that, you know, are not very big, but are kind of just wrapped around their neck and will hang down the front almost like a tie or a scarf. And on the ends of those, there will be these fringes, or there will be these tassels that they have tied. Now, what has happened, and I almost put a picture up here, sometimes they have an entire shawl where they have wrapped themselves in a shawl. And on the edge of this shawl, all the way around, from one side to the other, are these little tassels or these fringes that hang off. What the Jews have done with the command of God, as the Pharisees often did, you know, the Pharisees took the commands of God and it's almost like they had a Tim the Toolman Taylor mentality. You know Tim the Toolman Taylor? Y'all ever watch that show? You know, if you're going to have a garbage disposal, you know, let's not just have a regular old garbage disposal. You know, let's have one that's about 2,000 horsepower, and let's be able to grind the furniture up inside. You know what I'm talking about? You know, when that's right. You do it better than I do, Chuck. All right. So when something is good enough, he had to go, oh, let's do it even bigger. When God gave the Jews a command, sometimes the Pharisees took it to an even larger extreme, away from where God wanted it. So what they did is they started taking these shawls, these garments, putting fringes, putting these tassels on the end of it. And what they ended up doing is to put a tassel or a string, if you want to call it that, around these garments, and they would put 613 tassels, fringes, strings coming off of these garments all the way around. They put 613 because they had counted up. If you were a good Jew, you would have done this. They counted up in the Old Testament how many commands there were in the Old Testament. 613 commands. Somebody's had a lot of time on their hands to figure out 613. So they made garments that had 613 little tassels coming off. And when they had obeyed appropriately a command, they would tie that one in a knot. I've obeyed that one. I'll tie that in a knot. I got to work on this other one. But if they had 613 knots on their tassel, they were holy. Oh, they were the righteous. Oh, we are not worthy to be in your presence. Look at all of those knots that you have tied in your tassels. Remember their mentality, their Tim the Tool Man Taylor mentality. Blow it up to an extreme. What was their purpose in doing that? Get themselves attention. Look at my shawl. Look at my tassel. I got more tied than you do. I'm doing better in my relationship. It was all about image to other people. It was all about getting the attention. Now, look at Numbers 15. God did not make this confusing. Now, they did not make up. Man did not make up this idea of the tassels. But look in Numbers 15, and then we're going to get to Deuteronomy 22. Numbers 15, verse 38. Back up to verse 37. Again, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 38, speak to the children of Israel. Tell them to make tassels. Okay, I got that. Make tassels. Where do I make them? On the... what word do you have? Fringe. You have the word fringe? Some people have the word corners. Put tassels. Make tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations. Put a blue thread in the tassels of the corners. God, why am I supposed to do this? And you shall have the tassel that you may look upon it. Upon what? Upon it. And remember all the commandments, plural, of the Lord, and to do them, and that you may not follow the harlotry to which your own heart and your own eyes are inclined. They were to make tassels, and they were to make these tassels on the corner of the garment, and it was to be a visual reminder, when I see that tassel, I need to do what God says. Now, just in case that wasn't specific enough, look over in Deuteronomy 22, where God gave them the law again. In Deuteronomy 22 and verse 12, you shall make tassels. And where do you put the tassels? He gets very specific here. On the four corners of the clothing. This idea of having 613 tassels that would wrap around your body. Where did they get that? They didn't get it from God. Were these tassels on the four corners of their garment, were they intended to show forth how holy they were to everybody else? No. Had nothing to do with showmanship. It had everything to do with a visual reminder to the person wearing it that this is a command of God. So what did the Pharisees do? Matthew chapter 23. They enlarged the borders of their garments. Apparently, and this is not true, but this is funny to me. Apparently, to a Pharisee, the fatter you were, the better. Because then you could have a bigger garment, right? And you could have more tassels. Making that up, but they enlarged the border of their garments so they could have more tassels, so they could be more holy. You know, because if you're a skinny dude, how many tassels can you get around you? You know, that's not good. You know, if you need to gain some weight so you can be more holy in the sight of God. So, if you want an excuse to gain some weight, go ahead. There you go. You know, you wear all the tassels that you want. There was a purpose for those outer garments. And there were a purpose for those fringes or those tassels that God gave them. And yet man took that to an extreme. But as you look at this outer garment, these outer garments, and we're gonna skip through this real quick. But the outer garment, sometimes if you put an outer garment on and then you put a belt around it, or if you put this this kind of a girdle around it, it would create a pocket up here, wouldn't it? I mean, if you've got a robe or if you've got a one-piece garment on and you tie a robe around here, now you've got a pocket up here. You know what I'm talking about? You can carry all sorts of stuff, you know, and it's ready-made. When the Jews left Egypt, they put their kneading bowls inside their... Is that where you would carry your bowls, where you would make your dough? That's how much room they created for themselves. But here's the one I like down in Luke chapter 6. This area that they created by putting that belt around them and having all sorts of room inside their garment to store things. When Jesus says, Luke chapter 6, give, and what? It'll be given back to you. Pressed down, shaken together, running over. Where is it going to be put? It is going to be put, running over, will be put into your bosom. What was the bosom? The bosom was this area that was created by that belt being put around them. And God says, if you will give to me, I am going to fill up. I'm going to fill you up. Sometimes that was used in a negative way back when God told him he's going to fill it up with punishment. But here was a way for God to say, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless you so much that you will not even be able to carry it. It's interesting to look at these two garments, the inner garment and the outer garment, when Jesus talks about them in Matthew 5 and in Luke 6. And I only want to spend enough time here to point out to you that when you read Matthew 5 and Luke 6, Jesus puts them in a different order. We probably know Matthew 5 better than we know Luke 6. In Matthew 5, Jesus is dealing with a legal process. And so he says, if someone comes to you and sues you, they sue you because they want to take your inner garment. They come to you and they want the inner garment. They sue you. You owe me your inner garment. Jesus says, you need to be willing to give them your outer garment too. What does that say? That says that if they're so desperate, they're going to force this issue, you need to be willing to let them have something even more valuable. That outer garment was more valuable. This life is not made up of what's valuable to man. He says, if they sue you for it, you need to be having a heart that says, fine, you want this too? But in Luke 6, Jesus reverses it, and it's not about a legal process, it's about a robbery. Jesus says, if somebody comes to you and is trying to steal your outer garment, you need to have the heart that says, fine, you want my outer garment? You can have the inner garment too. I don't care. These things are just things. But to me, it's interesting to see Jesus change the order. And in one aspect, he's dealing with a legal process. In another aspect, he's dealing with an act of violence. But the message is the same in both, that we need to have a heart that is willing to yield, willing to give unto others, and is not focused on, well, this is mine. And I'm going to keep this because it belongs unto me. One more thing about the outer garments. You remember the soldiers when Jesus was crucified, that they took his garments. That outer garment, what'd they do? Well, they divided it into four pieces. But what about the inner garment? Did they cut it? Did they divide it into four pieces? No. Because when they got to that inner garment, it was unusual. At least for them, it was unusual because it was one piece. Was it sewn? Did it have any seams in it? Nope. Here was an interesting thing that while Jesus and his ministry was characterized not by riches but by poverty, this garment was valuable. Perhaps a gift from someone, but this seamless garment, the soldiers recognized the value of it. They did not tear it or rip it, but instead they fulfilled a prophecy by casting lots for it. Let me real quick talk about some things in regards to the belts, the girdles that they wore, and obviously sometimes those were leather. Sometimes they were made out of cloth of some kind. But let me just show you a couple things look in Jeremiah 13. Just a couple places where God takes the clothing and he draws a lesson for them out of that clothing. And this one in Jeremiah 13 is cool, where God is trying to get the Jews' attention through the prophet Jeremiah. And when Jeremiah talks about, when God talks about their clothing, he tells Jeremiah in Jeremiah 13, he says, "Go and get yourself a linen sash," Jeremiah 13 and verse 1. "Go buy yourself a linen sash, put it around your waist, but gird it around your waist, and do not put it in water." I don't want this thing washed. I don't want it cleaned. So Jeremiah did that. Word of the Lord, verse 3, came to me a second time, and he said, "Now, take that sash that you have acquired, which is around your waist, go to the Euphrates River, and hide it there in a hole in the rock." So now the thing's not only dirty because it hasn't been washed, but now it's going to be hidden in a hole in a rock someplace. And so he went and he did that. Now, verse 6, it came to pass after many days that the Lord said to him, "All right, arise, go to the Euphrates, take from there the sash where I commanded you to hide it there." And so Jeremiah did that in verse 7. And he dug and he took the sash from the place in which it was hidden. And there the sash, depending on what translation you have, what does it say? It was marred. It was ruined. It was profitable for nothing. Here was this great sash that was good for something at one point, but now it had become filthy. Now it had become hidden. Now it had become ruined. And now it had become good for nothing. And God says, "Now take that and show it to Israel and say, guys, this is what you are to me. At one time, Israel, I took you and I wrapped you around me and I wrapped me around you. We were like a belt, like a girdle, like a sash. We were close. We were dependent on each other. And then you went off and deserted me." And God says to Judah, "Now you are filthy. Now you are ruined, and now you are good for nothing to me." God took a simple thing like a sash or a belt and created a visual representation to them about what it was, about what they had done with their relationship to him. Now go to John chapter 13. This will probably be the last thing we can look at, right? Yeah, we got 1 minute. Look in John chapter 13. And you know this story where Jesus is in the upper room with his disciples. He's there the night before he was to be crucified. Before he institutes the Lord's Supper, they are sharing a common meal, the Passover meal together. The Bible says in John chapter 13 and verse 4 that Jesus got up. He took off his garments, probably talking about the belt, the girdle he had, as well as his robe, his outer garment, laid them to the side. And then John chapter 13 and verse 4 says that Jesus did what? He took a towel and he girded himself with that towel. It's not the only thing that he had on, but he took that towel and he girded himself, poured water in a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet with the towel with which he was girded. Jesus is trying to teach his disciples a very important lesson. They had just been arguing about who was the greatest, to the point that when they got to this upper room, nobody did the customary job of washing anybody's feet. That was too lowly a task for them. Jesus got up, the Master, the Savior, the Lord, the King who's in this room gets up, takes off his garments, girds himself with a towel, begins to wash their feet to teach them a very poignant, a very powerful, a very vivid lesson on humility. And some have suggested that when Peter wrote 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 5, remember Peter was in that upper room, and Peter says, "Be clothed with humility." What do you think may have been in Peter's head when he wrote those words? Be clothed with humility. Could he see Jesus clothing himself with humility? and saying, that's what we've got to do. There's a lot of lessons that are built around the clothing of Old Testament times that sometimes if we'll just piece them together, we can get a pretty rich and enjoyable understanding of the Bible. Thank you all for your good attention this morning.